21. The hour's first 15 minutes had gone pretty well. Mike had settled down outside, just sitting on the floor across the hall from Unit 231 to 232, staring at the metal door. He didn't know much anymore, only that he had to get in there.
I have to get in there, the door is closed, I have to get in, I have to, door closed.
As for a solution to that problem, his complex reasoning and problem-solving weren't firing in all cylinders, but they were grinding away as best they could, and had come up with a few different approaches. The first strategy had been based on a fragment of song his father used to love that was bouncing around somewhere in Mike's subconscious. Something about throwing yourself against a wall? But that strategy hadn't worked out very well. He'd likely separated his shoulder when he crashed his body into the metal door, and for sure he broke two fingers underneath himself when he fell to the cement. The pinky finger on his right hand stuck out at an angle Mike had never seen before, but he didn't give it much thought. He didn't have the thought to spare.
Have to get in, door closed, get in.
Strategy number two involved more vomit, this time by lifting up the garage door a crack and trying some target-specific barfing through the half-inch space underneath it. But the appeal of that approach had been dimmed by the sensory memory of his fingers, which had been crushed beneath the door when Naomi had slammed it down, and he never tried it. Strategy number three was, as they say, still in development. While Mike waited for that idea to come, he sat and stared at the corrugated metal door, dead-eyed. He'd wait. Behind the door, Naomi and Tea Cake were considerably more comfortable, but their minds were no more at ease. The unit in which they'd taken refuge was a lucky choice. It looked like someone's overflow furniture from when they'd had to move to a smaller house. Maybe the renters were sure the move was only temporary, that they'd be back on top one day soon and they'd need all their stuff again. The extra couches and chairs had been in there for a few years now, but they didn't stink. The owners had covered them loosely and loaded the cushions up with silica packets the way you're supposed to. There was even a dehumidifier plugged into one of the outlets. Naomi and TK had thrown the cheap sheets off a couple of the armchairs, shoved them toward the back of the unit to stay as far away from the door as possible, and even found a lamp with a bulb in it that still worked. They sat there, armchair to armchair, lamp on a box between them, and they stared at each other, wondering how it had all come to this. Tea Cake, who abhorred silence, was the first to speak.
So that's Dad.
Please stop saying that.
Sorry, it's just kind of hard to get my head around, that's all. How does that guy have a chance with you?
She looked at him.
He wasn't always like that.
Well, yeah, obviously I get that. I don't think anybody on Earth has ever been quite like that. But I mean, he had to be some version of that, right?
I guess so.
And you're, you know, you.
Thank you. She wished he'd stop talking.
And she's a beautiful kid.
Oops. Naomi tilted her head, looking at him, thinking. Oh, God, how he wished he could snatch those last five words out of the air before they found her ears. How he wished he could go back in time, just 3 seconds would do it. But he couldn't. He'd said it, she'd heard it, and she understood what it meant. His mind sorted through options. His ordinary instinct would have been to keep talking, to paper over it with more and more fulminations, to bury the slip of the tongue so deeply in blather that she might not notice, or would forget that he'd just announced he not only knew she had a child prior to tonight, but had actually seen that child, a clandestine event she had most certainly been unaware of till now. He was about to turn on the fire hose of lies, but something stopped him. This had been a long and bizarre night, and Naomi was different. And it occurred to him that maybe his instincts all these years had been the wrong ones. Maybe those instincts were the reason he had a shit job and no girlfriend. Maybe, Tea Cake thought, he should go with the truth for once. Maybe he should admit an unpleasant reality before it became impossible to do so. Maybe he should speak frankly and self-deprecatingly and forthrightly as soon as it was necessary. He could actually show a little fucking class for once, he thought. Maybe he could speak with such charm and grace, such wit and style, that this moment,
This admission, this candor, might actually win her over rather than drive her away. I followed your ass home one morning. It was fucked up, sorry. Or, you know, he could do it that way. Naomi's phone buzzed. She picked it up immediately, glanced at the number and answered, "Hello?" She paused, listening, staring at Teacake. She continued the perfunctory conversation, her eyes pinning him to his chair the whole time. "Yes. Yes. Same as 10 minutes ago. No, he hasn't tried. I assume he is. We haven't heard him walk away." "Yes. Okay." She hung up. Teacake tipped his chin for information. "She'd say anything new?" "No." "So, like, are they getting here soon or what?" He made an exaggerated show of checking the time on his phone, profoundly grateful for the change in subject. She'd forget. Maybe she forgot already. He kept talking. "Like 45 minutes from now?" "So, okay, it was like around 4 when you talked to the guy, so..." "You're a flip phone guy." She hadn't forgotten. He sighed. "I apologize, Naomi. I do dumb stuff sometimes. Ah, shit. In the parking lot of my building, right? About a week ago? Staring at your flip phone. You saw me? Yeah, I saw you. I knew you looked familiar tonight, but I couldn't figure out where I saw you before. I should have got it when you pulled your phone out. Nobody has those anymore. I'm sorry, Are you a stalker, Travis? No, I swear, because that's creepy. I know. I apologize. I never did that before. I would hope not. I just wanted to talk to you, and then I got in a jam, and I didn't know how to get out. I am sorry. She looked at him for a long moment, analytically, as if evaluating every piece of him, dissecting his entire character based on the look on his face in that one moment. Finally, "Okay, don't do it again." And it was done. He was stunned. This was not how he'd expected this to go. She was letting him off the hook. She was really, truly, for serious, letting him take a pass. She wasn't repulsed or any shit like that. He'd told the truth, and it worked. He smiled, and for nearly a full minute, the two of them had forgotten where they were and what was happening. Then they heard it. It was faint and far away, but it was so deep and down low that it vibrated through the entire cement and metal building. The overhead door rattled in its tracks ever so slightly. They both looked at it and then at each other at the same time. "Is this what it sounds like when the cavalry arrives?" Teacake stood, almost involuntarily. "They're here!" Naomi checked the time on her phone. This didn't feel right. "I don't think so." On the other side of the metal door, Mike had heard it too. It'd be impossible not to. It was louder out here, the brrrap echoing off the cinder block. The dull roar was getting louder fast and coming from outside. There were vehicles approaching. Mike knew that much, and vehicles meant there were people in them. And people meant grouping and spread and migration. That was all good and much easier to deal with than the metal door that made his whole body hurt just from looking at it.
"I don't have to get in there after all. Don't have to. Other people."
He turned and walked away down the corridor toward the sound. Outside the entrance of the building, headlights swept down the driveway and splashed across the front facade. There were 9 lights in all, a pair from the black half-ton pickup and one each from the 7 Harleys, which were the ones making all the noise. Griffin's fat boy, outfitted with the straight pipe exhaust, was the loudest of them all, so loud that even his fellow riders would have told you that it was a little over the top. You know, dude, there are other people in the world. Griffin banked the bike around in a semicircle by the front door, got off, tossed his goggles over the handlebars, and spit in the gravel. He'd been drunk for nearly 10 hours at this point, which wasn't that big a deal for him, but along with the weed he'd smoked and the half-pound beef burrito he'd wolfed down around 2 a.m., things were starting to repeat on him a little bit. Even a fat gut has its limits. The other Harleys rolled to a stop around him, and the drivers got off one by one. Cedric, Ironhead, Wino, Cuba, Garbage, and Dr. Stephen Friedman.
Dr. Friedman, like Griffin, was the sort of person who was impossible to nickname. Nothing seemed to stick, ever. There was just something about him that screamed, Dr. Stephen Friedman. And so, Dr. Stephen Friedman, he remained. A reasonably nice dentist who liked to ride and wear leathers. Shorty and the Rev got out of the truck. Most of them were in various stages and types of inebriation, with the exception of Dr. Friedman, who had his 18-month chip, and Shorty, who was straight edge. The night had started innocently enough at Griffin's rented house, a sparsely furnished two-bedroom ranch style near Cedar Lake that was down a long driveway at the end of a cul-de-sac. The neighbors were far enough away that they didn't complain about noise, and Griffin didn't care what happened to the place or what you did. You could get wasted, pass out, score just about anything you wanted, and Griffin had 55-inch curved Samsung Premium Ultra 4K TVs in the living room and both bedrooms, all three hooked up to bootleg cable, which meant nobody ever had to fight over what to watch. They'd come to the storage place at 4 a.m. because of the TVs. After 5 months of sitting on a stash of 24 hot Samsungs, Griffin had finally sold half of them tonight. It hadn't been easy. He'd been working on this group since midnight, and it wasn't until he brought out the last of his meager supply of Coke and passed it around that they all agreed to give him $100 each and take a TV home tonight in the Rev's truck. That was one TV for everybody and five for Garbage, who thought he could unload them to his buddy in the electronics department at Walmart for sale out back. That would be pretty hilarious, as Griffin was pretty sure the Walmart resupply depot in Topeka was where the TVs had come from in the first place. But he knew better than to ask questions. Griffin had agreed to store and sell the stolen TVs back in October and had grown to hate the things. They retailed for $799 and were supposed to be this big deal when they came out, but then nobody gave a shit that the screen was curved, or that it was 4K or LED or Ultra, any of that shit, because you could get almost the same TV anywhere for half the price and the picture looked exactly the same. The deal Griffin and the guy made was that they would split any sales Griffin could make 50-50, which meant that tonight, for his troubles, he would clear all of $600. It was barely more than the cost of the storage unit for the 5 months he'd had it, but at least he wouldn't be underwater anymore, and he'd be halfway out of this problem. He'd arrived at the storage place angry. He must have called that little turd tea cake a dozen times in the past hour to tell him he was on his way with some serious people. And if Tea Cake knew what was good for him, he'd piss off to the other side of the complex and not see things he'd wish he hadn't. But the kid never answered his phone. The shithead had apparently gotten the message, though, because as Griffin stomped to the door, he could see the front desk was unoccupied. But then he froze, passkey in midair, when he saw the wall. His already bulging eyes bulged out even farther. There was a hole in the wall behind the desk. Two holes, as a matter of fact. Big ones. Messy, 4-foot-wide gashes in the drywall. Griffin's entire bald head flushed crimson, hot blood rushing into it.
What the fuck, that little shit? What the fuck, what the fuck?
He wondered. He swiped his card through the reader, the door buzzed, and he stormed inside. He hunched like a boxer getting ready to throw a punch and stalked over to the desk. Staring at the holes, aghast. Ironhead stepped up beside him.
Oh, Griffin, your shit's fucked up. What kind of place you run here?
I'm gonna fucking rip him a new one. What the fuck did that little fucker do to my fucking place of business?
Cedric and Garbage seemed to think it was kind of funny. Ironhead hopped over the desk, drawn by the blinking lights behind the wall.
There's a whole bunch of electronics and shit back here. What is this?
Dr. Stephen Friedman stepped up next to Griffin, sober and sympathetic. Looks like you have some personal problems, Daryl. Griffin hated Dr. Friedman, even though he was the only one who used Griffin's Christian name. Griffin pulled out his phone and stabbed a thick finger at Tea Cake's number again, but the Rev's voice boomed through the lobby, impatient.
We doing this or what?
Griffin hung up. He would kill Tea Cake later.
Yeah. This way.
He walked to the gate that led to the storage units and swiped his card again. The gate buzzed and they pushed through, headed into the back. As they made their noisy way down the corridor and into the depths of the storage facility, Cuba heard a sound to her left and turned to look. They were passing the open mouth of another hallway. She got a glimpse of a person, not a security guard, but a slightly puffy guy in too tight jeans and a work shirt that was green spattered and strained at the buttons, as if he'd put on a lot of weight recently and refused to buy new clothes. The guy was looking their way as he walked through another intersection, 100 feet away. They made eye contact, and she found his look disconcerting, his face as swollen as the rest of him, and his stare a bit too intense. She saw him only for a second or two, and then he passed out of sight, moving parallel to them in the same direction, as if following them from one corridor away. Cuba, who had not 1 ounce of Latina blood in her but did enjoy ropa vieja, wondered what kind of weirdo would hang out in a self-storage place at 4 o'clock in the morning. She hurried to catch up with the others.